Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Hey, welcome. Welcome all to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim. Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy lives, busy schedules to join us for this edition, this 2018 edition, the very first of the new year. And happy to bring it to you today. And always enjoy doing this. Highlight of my day. So thanks for joining me. Thanks for being here. You can contact the show if you'd like. We got several ways to do that. There's a chat room available. You can access that through Blog Talk Radio. You just enter through there. You can chat away. You can be completely anonymous on there. Just come up with some generic username, and you're all good to go. We'll talk to you that way. You can dial into the show if you'd be so bold. You can do that at 949-270-5953. Talk to me. Talk to the guests. All that in store. Also, you can follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. On Twitter, it's at FSH Society. Facebook, of course, is the / FSH Society. And if you want to just email me directly, you can do that as well. My email handle is fshradiohost@gmail.com if you just want to conversate with me, either during the show or after. Either way, we're here to do that for you and help facilitate your questions, concerns, comments, whatnot, here for you. This is a show I want to really have to be a lot of times to be more of like a support group. And last month, it was very much that kind of show. We had multiple callers on, multiple guests. We had some great, great conversations with some fantastic people that are dealing with FSH and had some great stories to share, inspirational. And it was a lot of fun to do. It was definitely by the first time where it wasn't necessarily we had a featured guest or guests like we have tonight. It was really about you, the listener, to have you come on and talk a little bit about what you're going through, share your stories. And then we had great conversations with those people that called in. And like I said, this is a forum. This is for everybody. This is not just about me talking to the awesome featured guests that we have each week, but it's also about you and building that community of support is very, very important. And I love doing it. This is definitely a passion of mine. And if you have comments about the show, maybe you want more of the show and you want to fill our inbox with those kind of things, you can do that as well. The FSH at FSHsociety.org, I believe, is the email. FSHradiohost@gmail.com is mine. So tonight, we're going to talk, I think, a lot about, you're going to find us talking about friendship. We're going to talk about support for each other. Doing things for each other. Who is that person in your life, right? Think about that. Think about the person that would drop anything to help you. Think about the person that would jump through, you know, hurdles, leaps and bounds to be there for you. That's part of what we're going to talk about today. Also, we're going to, you know, kind of hit on that subject of changing your life, you know, taking a leap of faith perhaps. Maybe it's with that person that you're side by side. It might not even necessarily be your life partner. It could be a friend. It could be someone that you've known since you were little, and they're in the trenches there with you. And you want to maybe take on something that normally you'd be afraid to do, but together you have the strength. We're going to talk about those things today. Today we're going to talk to two men who changed my life, who have changed countless others and are still doing that. But at first, I think they took a leap of faith together and started changing their own life. And we're gonna talk to them about that. It's our featured guests tonight. They author a book and have a film out under the same name, I'll Push You. And the MDA has promoted the film. They promoted it via email. That's how I got involved with it and saw it in my area here in Milwaukee. I had the great pleasure of meeting Justin Skisuk and Patrick Gray when they came to the Milwaukee area, along with two other great new friends that I met as well. And we had a blast. And I've never met two such down-to-earth, fantastic men that didn't know us at all, but sure opened up about themselves and enjoy listening to our stories. And I really am happy that Justin and Patrick can be here today, be on the phone with us tonight, and share their story and to be here. Because to me, that is just encompasses what this whole show is about. I call it a show because, well, you know, I want it to be entertaining, of course. I want you to come back each month. I don't want it to be always downtrodden or just information. I want it to be where maybe we have a laugh. Maybe we have a cry. That's fine. But we're excited to come back here each month. And I'll tell you, this month's show, I'm really excited to talk to these guys again. And I look forward to it. So those are our featured guests. So if you want to Google ahead of time here, I'll push you. Check out their site, I'llPushYou.com. Like I said, the book I know is fantastic. I'm guilty. I've not read the book yet. I have seen the film. I own the film. I've been watching it over the last month or so over and over again, partly for some, you know, refresh my memory, research, questions, yes. But I love it. I love watching it. I'm inspired by it. And I'd love you to open up another window on your browser right now. Go on Google. Order it up. And help support them and help support that cause, help support the MDA, you know, which, of course, is great friends of the FSH Society and support, right? That's kind of what this is all about. So I really look forward to that tonight. Also to mention, next week or next month, I just want to say next week. Maybe that's foreshadowing. Maybe eventually this will be weekly. I want to foreshadow or talk about next month's guest, Dr. Tahsin Mazafar. So we're going to have to work on my pronunciation of this person's name. I'm sorry. But from the University of California, Irvine, he's the director of the Muscular Dystrophy Center there. He's knowledgeable about FSHD and was the principal investigator of the Tyra Clinic trial. So I think that's going to be also a great guest for so a little more of the science side, but you know, we're going to bring some entertainment value into that as well and education. So that's going to be a fun show. And we'll have that in February, the last Wednesday in February there. So go ahead and keep us on your calendar for then. So tonight, though, big guest. We're gonna do a conference call with these two gentlemen. So that's always fun. I wish I could get them in studio, but I don't think they were willing to come all the way back to Frostbite City called Milwaukee, even though it's not too bad outside right now. But well, let's just say, though, I'm still glad I'm kind of just down in my little homemade studio and nice and cozy, warm, talking to you great people and sharing some great stories. So I'll tell you what, why don't we take our first break? When we come back, we'll bring in Justin and Patrick. We'll talk some. We'll listen to their stories. And if you have questions, you can start loading those up on the chat room on Blog Talk Radio. You can send me the email questions if you'd like, fshradiohost@gmail.com, and we can start loading those questions up as well, or even as we go. It'd be awesome to hear from you if you have any questions for these guys. So why don't we take our first break, and when we come back, we'll have our featured guests on. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. Simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Yeah.
welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. I'm your host, Tim, and if you'd like to join us in this show, either the chat room is a great way to do that. Emails, fshradiohost@gmail.com. You can get me directly as we're going right here.
Cool.
And love to hear from you, because I know you're going to probably have some questions for these great featured guests that we have tonight. We have from the film and book, I'll Push You, Justin Skisuk and Patrick Gray are going to be on tonight. So really looking forward to this. Met these guys that came into Milwaukee, and to my surprise, we had, I think I had a beer. I'm not sure what they had. It wasn't a beer, but we had a good time. So why don't we welcome them both in right now? We welcome in Justin and Patrick. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
How's it going?
There's always I'm doing great. Yeah. I'm hearing you guys well. It's always that lovely radio delay that I think, as me as a producer type person over here, I think my heart stops for a second.
I know.
I think
technology,
that's fair.
So
never perfect, right?
Right. So I love to get in with the guests, and right away when I have people on, if it's been this show that I've just been so blessed to do, or if it was back in the day when I did radio talk shows and we'd have some interesting guests on those as well. But I love kind of getting the listeners invested in you guys and to kind of know maybe a little bit of the backstory. So to me, the first question that seemed to pop in my head was, and either one of you can answer this, you'll have to fight for the first voice for the responses. The question is, how did you meet?
At the hospital.
at the hospital. We were actually born, this is Patrick speaking, we were born about 36 hours apart. So Justin was born on July 12th, kind of late, and I was born early on the 14th. So our moms passed each other as his mom was leaving and my mom was going in. So we don't have memories without each other.
Wow. Is that how you remember it, Justin?
Exactly. It's how I remember it as well. So, yeah, you know, we go way, way, way back, and even our families go way back as well. So, you know, our moms have known each other since since fourth grade. And then our collective parents have known each other. They went to college together, though I think Pat's dad's a little older, kind of on the older end of that. But,
yeah.
And then we found out as we were writing our book about a year and a half ago that my great uncle was best man in Patrick's grandfather's wedding.
What?
So.
Oh my God.
Family goes way back. Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the connection there is rooted pretty deep, even unbeknownst to you there. It sounds like for most of the time you've known each other that there was even a deeper connection still, or another layer, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
So then that leads then, you know, as I'm trying to navigate, you know, getting these two gentlemen like such as yourselves on at the same time, which is always fun to have two, you know, voices at me and trying to figure, okay, we want to know where you guys met, right? But then the other thing is, you know, before we start getting into about the pilgrimage and the great journey you guys took together, is that Justin, you know, you were diagnosed with, and I'll leave it blank if you want to fill in the with the listeners, what were you diagnosed with and when did you find that out?
Yeah, so just shy of my 16th birthday, I grew up as a normal kid doing normal things, whatever normal means, right, these days.
Right.
But I grew up, you know, being very active in sports, and I was an avid tennis player and soccer player, and I was involved in an automobile accident just shy of my 16th birthday, and later that, I walked away from the accident, just, you know, some scrapes and bruises, and thought I just kind of went through this crazy thing. A friend of mine ended up rolling his truck on the freeway going about 80 miles an hour. So it was a really kind of horrific car accident. But all was well until about 6 months later, I started noticing weakness in my left foot. I was playing soccer that following fall, running down the soccer field, and I noticed my foot was flopping around and wasn't working the way that it should. And, I mean, I can feel everything from head to toe. It just wasn't working. And it was kind of like a limp fish. It was kind of really odd, very odd experience. And, and you know, so I brought it to my parents' attention and, you know, went to go see a doctor, went to go see a podiatrist first. And then he's like, this is way out, outside my, my realm. So ended up seeing a neurologist and going through several different treatments and just a very long process of elimination. But I was finally diagnosed with a very rare autoimmune. It's a progressive neuromuscular disease stemming from my autoimmune system, and it's called multifocal acquired motor axonopathy. So it's, it's a very rare. it's a mouthful for sure. To give your listeners some context, it's very, very similar to ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. So I was actually diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's in my early 20s, but now I've since re-diagnosed because it didn't quite fit the model of ALS. But the disease I have is very rare. There's not very many, at least according to my knowledge, not very many people have the disease, at least in the continental United States. And, you know, it's a challenge. You know, it started my left foot, like I mentioned earlier, went up my left leg. The weakness moved to my right foot, went up my right leg, and then, you know, kind of slowly but surely was getting worse in, you know, waist and below. And then it ended up jumping to my right, my upper body, my right shoulder, and then worked its way down my arms and my hands very, very quickly. So, you know, I'm at the point now where I live, and, you know, every day I use a power wheelchair to get around, and I have to be helped in and out of bed, getting my clothes on, in the bathroom, showering, feeding. I mean, pretty much, you know, most of, you know, people's daily thing that they do, I have to be assisted with. So, you know, it's a challenge for sure. But it doesn't, you know, in some weird way, it doesn't really get in the way of me wanting to do what I want to do in life. You know, I have to do it differently. I have to think about it differently, but I don't let it stop me.
Yeah, it sounds like that. I mean, I had this like odd epiphany when I was, you know, months into my diagnosis of this FSH muscular dystrophy, similar to you, not knowing what it was or anything and not even realizing, I guess, I had it my whole life and ta-da, it has a name. So, but I kind of thought to myself, even as I was thinking about meeting you guys and doing this show and how it makes me feel. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel blessed. And I thought to myself, this disease has actually opened doors for me and has actually changed me in a positive way. I don't know if I would like myself if I didn't have this. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, it's you know, the disease that I have is done many, many blessings in my life. I mean, it's been hard, and not to say that, you know, life is easy by any means for anybody, right? It takes work. It takes. You know, everyone has their struggles in many ways, and like you and I, you know, we have, you know, a disease, even though they're not the same. You know, it has opened my eyes to see the world in a completely different light, and it's made me focus on things that are important in life. It's made me focus, or it's led me down a path like yourself, like where, you know, you're doing this podcast and doing what you're doing within, you know, the realm of your disease. But in my world, I've been able to speak to, I mean, just last year we were doing, we did a kind of a recap, and we ended up speaking in front of 100,000 people live last year, like 100,000 people. I never thought in a million years I could ever even say that. And it's crazy to even think about the people that I've met and to be able to go down this road and this path of, in life, you know, and to have my best friend, you know, Patrick along with me, who's been a constant, you know, rock in it. And, you know, it hasn't been easy for him as well, but, you know, he's been along with me this entire way. And, you know, I can't even begin to put into words how much I am grateful for that.
You have a good gift there of segue, Justin, because that's exactly where I was going next for the next question was for Patrick is, okay, you're the friend, lifelong friend, and obviously you've seen it from diagnosis and the struggles, but going back in your mind when you first were told of what Justin had, what was your reaction? How did you wrap your head around all that?
Oh, yeah, you know, that was kind of a long evolution, really, for two reasons. One, just the progression of Justin's disease was quite slow, and we really had no idea what the implications were long-term. And two, you know, Justin's demeanor and the way he kind of tackles life really had a pretty major impact on how I saw the disease affecting him. So I'll kind of synthesize those two into a better answer. But when Justin, yeah, you know, was first presented with these new symptoms, you know, this deficit in his foot and that kind of thing, we were high school kids living life and having fun, and really didn't faze him, so didn't faze me. And as we head off to different colleges after we graduate, and still weakness is spreading, he's just not letting it faze him to the degree a lot of people probably would. You know, he had to give up tennis, had to give up soccer, had to give up running. Pretty active guy, and suddenly there's certain things he can't do that he's used to, but he just kind of reinvested his energy in other things like his artwork or music. So that kind of first stage when it was affecting his waist and below really was not terribly challenging because of his outlook. But the disease continued to progress. You know, in 2010, it took his hands and his feet. His feet were already gone, I guess, because his upper body was affected pretty aggressively and pretty quickly. So about 60% or so, 70% of his upper body was lost in, gosh, what, Jay, about 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks?
Yeah, it was quick. Yeah.
It was quick.
Wow.
And at that point in time, living in San Diego, California, I'm up in Idaho, so we're about 1,000 miles apart. It had just been very intentional with our relationship to make sure we stay connected, took trips as, mm-hmm, you know, as families, really just made a conscious effort to pursue one another. And so I know this guy so well, and when it hit me, like the full weight of what this could mean hit me was when he lost his hands, when his ability to do design work, which was his career, is suddenly taken away. That's when, I don't want to say reality set in, because, I mean, it was real all along, but mm-hmm, what this might mean for the future suddenly became very different. Now we're looking at, okay, could this ultimately take his life? And that's a reality now. And it took a long time to come to terms with that. I spent a lot of time very angry, very bitter, very frustrated and confused as to why. But through all that struggle, you know, we both kind of went down our own paths of questioning why this is. And Justin came out on the other side of his questioning a little sooner than I did. We kind of came to the conclusion, I guess I came to the conclusion independently of Justin, of, man, you know, there's so many times that we can insert ourselves into a battle we think someone is fighting, as opposed to really taking the time to recognize the battle that they are indeed fighting. And Justin wasn't looking for a miracle or some type of miraculous change or healing. He just wanted to continue to live his life in spite of this. And I was obsessed with something he wasn't obsessed with. I was, you know, wanted a change. I wanted this to be back to quote unquote normal, when all my buddy wanted was me to step in and be hands and feet. And once I came to terms with that, even though the future is unknown, it's like, oh man, life is so much more beautiful when we can really acknowledge what somebody else needs and desires, as opposed to imposing our own thoughts and maybe our own preconceived notions about what they need upon them.
Mm-hmm. So obviously it affected your friendship, but you'd never diminished it. In fact, it sounds like it strengthened it. You guys were in it together. And to me, that's just, I mean, it is amazing. I mean, I've had friends that have come in and out of my life, and sometimes they come back. I have a childhood friend that I grew up with, and now we're probably closer now than we've ever been. And I think part of it, it might be because of my diagnosis, but I'm not really sure, but it just, there's just a reconnection. But to have you guys be friends for that long through this kind of a storm, a massive one, and still be this close, and then to tackle on what we're going to talk about next, which is this amazing pilgrimage you took together on the Camino del Santiago. Now, whose idea was it to tackle the Camino? And for those that don't know, well, of course, we'll need a little bit of a synopsis of what is this pilgrimage.
Yeah, I'll take the first part, and maybe Patrick can take the second part. So the idea of the pilgrimage, of doing the pilgrimage, was mine. I learned about it. It's a really interesting, for me, it's kind of an interesting day. I remember it very, very clearly. It was the spring of 2012, and it was just I was living in San Diego at the time. We both live in Idaho now, so we live about 2 miles apart in Eagle, Idaho. But at the time, I was living in San Diego. And, you know, it was just a nondescript Saturday, just kind of minding my own business. You know, my kids were playing around the house, and my wife was, I think, doing something in the kitchen. And I stumbled across Rick Steves from Rick Steves Europe on PBS, if you've ever watched him. He's a super dork, but he's awesome at the same time. and, you know, I've always loved his stuff, and he's such a great way of looking at travel. And I said, oh, okay, I'll just kind of watch this. And the episode was on northern Spain, Pamplona, running of the bulls, you know, the festival San Fermín. Mm-hmm. That's the festival of running of the bulls. And the pilgrimage called the Camino de Santiago. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And so as I was watching it, I mean, it was just, it sounds really weird. And I say this, I don't know how to best interpret it, but it's like it called me. I've heard other people say that they've gone on the pilgrimage, that the Camino calls them. And in my case, that's what happened as well. It was just the best way I can describe it is my voice. There was like a voice, you know, inside me, and my heart was telling me, and my mind and my soul and everything was just screaming from inside, just saying, you need to go do this. You need to go do this. And, you know, it scared the crap out of me, to be honest with you. And so, you know, I called my wife from the other room and showed her, you know, some of the episode. And I said, what do you think? And, you know, think I should do this in my wheelchair? And and she said, yeah, if you want to go do it, go do it. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And then Patrick was visiting me for spring break a couple weeks later. So I had recorded the episode, and we had been looking for something to do together for quite some time, but we couldn't, just the two of us, but we couldn't quite, you know, nail it down. Just a couple of life things were kind of getting in the way, and scheduling and other things. But, you know, we were really kind of on the same page of looking for something to do. And so I showed him this episode, and I remember just like as yesterday, he's sitting in my living room off to my right, and we watch it in pretty much silence. And I say, after it ended, I said, so do you want to go across 500 miles of northern Spain with me? And he said, I'll push you. That was his response.
Wow.
So that's why the book is titled that way, and that's why the movie is called I'll Push You, is because that's what Patrick said. That was his response. So that's how we came up. That's how I learned about it.
That's how it starts. So then, Patrick, what, I guess Justin's bouncing the, you know, what is the undertaking of this pilgrimage, you know? Is it a short little jaunt? Is it, you know, what, just let's paint a picture so people understand what you were really looking at taking on?
Yeah. So to answer your question from earlier, just to give people perspective on what the Camino is, it's an ancient pilgrimage that dates back to the 9th century, and it rests in the tradition that the bones of St. James are buried at the site of where the cathedral of, in Santiago de Compostela in northwestern Spain is located. And, you know, in the Catholic Church, individuals began taking this pilgrimage for a variety of reasons, but just marching out their front door. Over time, different trade routes became more popular for this actual pilgrimage, as opposed to people walking along from their front door. They would converge on some of these paths that became the more commonly known routes today for the Camino. The most popular one is what's called the French Way, and that's the one that we chose to take. And it starts in the southwestern corner of France in a little town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. And you actually have to go over the Pyrenees mountain range, 500 miles east to west to the northwestern corner of Spain, Santiago. You actually go over three mountain ranges across the desert, which is called the Meseta. It's more like Kansas than anything, but long, flat, and pretty darn hot with no shade. Several rivers, rough terrain. It was a monumental undertaking, and at the time when I said I'll push you, I had absolutely no clue what I was in for. It was complete naivety.
So how long does it take to do this?
You know, it took us 35 days. We've met people that have done it in a little bit less. Most people we meet do it in around 40 days. So it's a long journey.
Yeah. And, you know, I might add that, you know, that's Patrick is referring to the route that we took, leaving from St. John, you know, take about, you know, 35, 40 days, but you don't have to do the full 500 to do it. You know, to get your, what's called your Compostela, which is your certificate that you get when you complete it. And yeah, I think the minimum is 100 kilometers. So what is that, 63 miles or whatever that is. So, you know, some people do, you know, start from St. John and walk all the way to Santiago like we did. Some people will start in, you know, lesser chunks, or sometimes they'll break it up into three different, you know, chunks or years, or some people – even walk way longer than what we did. We met a lady in her early 80s that walked out of her front door in Belgium. So
what?
By the time we met her, she was already, I don't know, 1,500 miles in or whatever, however long that is. You know, and she planned on walking back, if I'm not mistaken. But
How did we know now that, you know, how you guys started this and why you wanted to do it, the massive undertaking it is, not to mention that, you know, Patrick is pushing Justin in the wheelchair. So obviously that has some interesting logistic challenges involved in it. Because that terrain, when you say it's rough, I think you're kind of putting that mildly based on what I saw. You're talking like very large chunks of rock that a normal person, if they're not careful, would roll their ankle very easily. You're talking very, you know, steep downhill, steep inclines, thick, dense, heavy mud. So you not only, I don't think, just pushed Justin, but you also pulled as well, right?
Oh yeah. We had to start the whole journey on the eastern side of the Pyrenees, as we had to go up that mountain pass. We had our buddy Ted Hardy with us, who is a firefighter and paramedic and good friend. And so he asked if we needed help, and we said, yeah, we do. We need help with the front end. He came over with us. And so for those first, you know, several days, especially in the Pyrenees, we had one of us out front and one in back. So we were pushing and pulling nonstop. And, you know, the first day was one of the hardest days for sure. We had several stretches that were just filled with enormous amounts of rock and mud and just obstacles that were hard to get over. But to kind of give you perspective, that first day was 17 miles and 13 of those miles were up. And we had sections that were as steep as 30%, where we had to actually get Justin out of his chair and carry him in a sling and then go back into the chair because there's no way we'd get it up. So to give you perspective on the chair itself, it was a three-wheel baby jogger on steroids, as Justin likes to call it. Basically, an aluminum wheelchair with, you know, two mountain bike tires in back and one smaller tire on a swivel in front for navigation. And it weighed about 25 pounds. But by the time you get Justin in there, the chair itself and gear on there with water and food for the day, it weighed about 250 pounds. And so getting that up any kind of grade was rough. I kind of describe it to people when you're doing a workout and you get that burning point where your thighs and your hamstrings and your calves are burning from a good leg workout. I was in that space burning for about 8 hours straight. It was awful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now
it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, now you talked about that wheelchair. It did look pretty cool, but it did have a little bit of a mechanical hiccup early on. Is that accurate, or am I putting that too mildly?
No, I don't know if you call it a hiccup or we didn't use it for what it was intended for.
Yeah.
Because
go ahead,
you please fill us in on the details of that little incident with the chair.
Yeah, that was day two out of our 35-day journey.
Day two.
You know, we had put it so much through the ringer going over the Pyrenees that, you know, we were a couple miles into day two and we were cruising along pretty well. I mean, we were like, oh my gosh, we made it over that. You know, the rest of this should be fairly, you know, doable. I think Patrick, as he has, you know, definitely said publicly, he got a little cocky and was like, we did that. We can do this. We got it. And as soon as he said those words, the front wheel snapped off. And I went feet first right into the dirt. And Ted was pushing from behind. And and we were in the middle of a forest. And it was raining. And, you know, but throughout that, you know, getting that, trying to figure out what to do, you know, we had to find an aluminum welder in A, we had to get out of the forest and figure out how to get to, you know, civilization somewhere. But so we did, and ended up through some help with some fellow pilgrims, we ended up getting to, we ended up going to Pamplona, finding an aluminum welder, just like, you know, we call it the 6 degrees of the aluminum welder in Pamplona, because we ended up finding, you know, we'd find one guy and he's like, no, I can't do that, and then somebody else. But anyways, it took, I think it was like 48 hours after the wheel broke, we were on the road back at it. And the weld held. I mean, it was an amazing weld. He held it, you know, did a really, really great job, and it's still rock solid today. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a very interesting day and a half of like, oh my Lord, what are we going to do here? How are we going to move forward through this? And, you know, we've learned how to just lean on each other and look for ways to work through it. And we did. So, you know, try not to panic. You try not to freak out, you know, you just go like, okay, well, how do we navigate this? And,
right.
You know, he couldn't have done it without me and I couldn't have done it without him. And, you know, we had, and the help of many other people, by the way, it wasn't just the
right.
two of us trying to figure this out. There are other people that helped us, try to figure out a solution. And it's just one of the very first examples of how many people came alongside of us to help us throughout this whole journey.
So was it ever a point, you know, maybe it was the first day before you actually took on the trail, and I know that there was people where you kind of check in, almost looking at you, it seemed like when I was watching it, with like, you guys must be crazy look on your on their faces.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it was that moment, or maybe it was when the wheel broke. Did you ever think, uh-oh, what did we get ourselves into?
Yes.
Well, I would say we thought, what do we get ourselves into on a daily basis? we never thought, let's raise the white flag and give up. But there were definitely some serious oh, crap moments. And you throw in, you know, you talk about the gal at the pilgrim's office, you know, she was pretty skeptical, but we had a lot of negativity before we stayed. We had, actually had friends and family that were like, you guys are stupid. This is, what are you thinking? Why would you do this? Just didn't understand
right.
the vision. And I mean, the day we start walking, this is one of my favorite stories of people that are negative and just don't, you know, just not good people to be around. Right.
Right.
We're at
right.
a little coffee shop getting ready to head out right there in St. Jean. And Ted was, I can't believe he was dropping off, he's throwing something away or whatever, and this gal who was helping us comes out in her broken English, and she asked what we're doing, and we said we're going to, you know, we're doing the Camino, we're climbing the Pyrenees. And she said, and that thing? We said, yep. She just turned around, and under her breath, shaking her head, she says, no, you're not, and just walks off. And it's like,
wow.
Wow. You're awesome. Thanks,
wow.
Thanks for that. But
yeah, thanks for the support.
Justin,
wow.
Yeah. Right, yeah, I know. Yeah, thanks for the support. But what Justin and I have kind of just – we've always been kind of this way. You tell us we can't do something, and damn it, we're going to prove you wrong. So it's just
yep.
kind of fuel for the fire. If you're, you don't see it, you don't understand why we're doing something, and you throw negativity at us, we're just like, all right, you're the person that we're going to have sights on to say, you know what? We did it.
Wow. Inspiration. That's what that is then for you. You get a negative person, it's like, oh, yeah? Watch this.
Right.
Right. Now, you know, I've
yeah.
kind of learned, you know, dealing with negativity in my life, because that's not the first time I've had somebody say you're an idiot, you know, for wanting to do something. And, you know, how I just look at it is, you know, they just don't see life the way that I do. And
yeah.
if I'm giving an example, like if John F. Kennedy said, you know, hey, we want to put somebody on the moon, and you know, the first person that said, you can't do that, you know, and he listened to that person, do you think that we would have had anybody on the moon? No, I mean, he
mm-hmm.
completely just ignored or pushed through it and said, listen, you know, I see where you're coming from, but we're gonna give it a shot. We're gonna try. And
yeah.
you know, I've always kind of, I think Patrick and I have always kind of looked at that as going, you know, okay, well that's what you believe, but that's not what we believe. So we'll see when we get to Santiago.
Right.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
I wonder if that person.
I was just gonna say we're firm believers that, you know, things that are impossible, or it's just because you haven't done it yet. It's only impossible because it hasn't been done. It's not impossible because it can't be done. It's just someone hasn't taken the time, energy, or ingenuity to achieve it. And I also want to clarify
right.
that Justin and I have been called idiots many times when it was deserved. Just saying.
That's true. That is true.
I just wonder if that woman that said good luck, or you know, her little snarky comment, I wonder if she ended up buying a copy of your book when it was all said and done.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I hope it changed your life. Yeah, I hope it changed your attitude. Yeah. Now, speaking of attitude and the positivity, what I also loved was it felt like I was almost looking in on sometimes a, you know, like when guys hang out, or maybe when you were a kid, and it's kind of, you know, like the camaraderie, and it's the funny moments or the giggle fest or whatever, right? And you know, I think everybody can relate to those moments. They've had them in their life, but I saw them in this film and I found myself laughing out loud. One in particular was when, you know, how Patrick, you were saying you had to take Justin and put him in a sling and carry him at certain points. And there was this great
mm-hmm.
shot where you guys are carrying him in a sling, and unbeknownst to you, at least at that moment, Justin gives this awesome, kind of silly, snarky, almost smile to the camera. It was a riot.
Yep.
It was almost to say, like, I don't know what he was thinking, but I knew it was, he was keeping it light. You know, like, almost like, how ridiculous is this? I'm in a sling, and I'm on this huge mountain, you know, in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I thought that the humor, and even the time where the great song, It's Getting Hot in Here, was starting to be sung in the bathroom when you guys were helping Justin out, you know, so he could get clean and this and that, and you're taking certain parts of his clothes off, right, to get him ready, and all of a sudden here comes the silly song. I mean, those moments were spectacular. So Did you have a lot of those, even, you know, even ones we all didn't see or read about?
Oh yeah. Man, yeah. I would say our lives have been filled with those moments long before the Camino. You know, even as kids, it's funny you say that, because we actually dive into some of our more embarrassing and stupid, silly moments throughout our childhood and young adult years in our book that you just can't dive into in film. But we've always approached life with lots of humor. And what's funny about that scene in the bathroom that you're referencing, where we start seeing and it's getting hot in here, we had totally forgotten there were cameras rolling. And so when we actually see the film as it's getting put together, we're like, we're such dorks. We actually did that.
It was hilarious. And but obviously awesome. It did not hit the cutting. Yeah, it didn't hit the cutting room floor. It was worth keeping.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's plenty of moments. I think my favorite moment, I'm going to throw Justin under the bus here. Is that okay?
Sure.
We were in a little tiny town, and the long and short of it is that we had a long day. We're sitting down for dinner. It's Justin and myself, and actually our director, sitting at a table. And we're in the bar, and the bars are kind of the center of commerce in Spain, in these towns. So you can get a drink, you can get food, snacks, whatever. And there's this little tiny Spanish gal at the counter who's buying an ice cream, like a drumstick, you know, those prepackaged ice creams. And
she
buys this thing and takes a bite out of it and locks eyes with Justin. And Justin's sitting to my left. He comes marching over. And she kind of straddles him, starts rattling off rapid-fire Spanish, and Justin's trying to keep up, but he doesn't speak as good Spanish as gal does. And all of a sudden, she shoves the ice cream cone in his mouth. Like,
what?
It's half-eaten. And then, before I know it, she's taking another bite and put it back in Justin's mouth. And, like, he's involuntarily sharing an ice cream cone with this stranger. And he turns to me and he says, "Are you going to do anything?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not." And I just take a picture.
Friend.
And that's one of my favorite stories on the Camino, because it was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So were you in the mood for ice cream? Yeah, and were you in the mood for ice cream at that point?
I'm always in the mood for ice cream. Oh, yeah. I think what really happened, well, not, I mean, Patrick's accurate in his storytelling, but how it all started was I saw her get the drumstick out of the, you know, those, like, deep freezers that they have, and, you know, and sometimes they have them in convenience stores or whatever. And I saw her pull it out and unwrap it, and I was like, "Oh, that looks good," you know. And I think I remember saying to Patrick, you know, "Hey, maybe when we're done with dinner, can you grab me one of those?" And as soon as I said that, she just comes walking over to me, and before I knew it, it was in my mouth, and I was sharing it with a strange lady. But you know, it's okay. That makes a great story.
Yeah, it is. It is a good story. Oh my goodness. Now. Along a trip, you came up to a place labeled with the Iron Cross, where people leave something behind. I found that very profound, obviously, for most people, you know, that image of leaving something behind, almost like you're releasing a burden from yourself. And throughout what I was watching is I learned a lot from both of you, because a lot of the things that you've said in that film and I've thought of or said out loud myself almost word for word since my diagnosis. And when Justin, you know, you talked at some point in the film about how if maybe, you know, your life was cut short, if you cut it short yourself and released that burden from other people, like they didn't have to then deal with that. You took that out of the equation. I've thought that myself. Patrick, you said something about when you were at that Iron Cross and talking about leaving something behind, but being a better father, being a better husband, picturing moments where you weren't what you thought you could be, you know, that, and I know I'm only paraphrasing, it all, but I thought those things many times about how I treat my, you know, wife, my children, I could be better. So when you left something there, you know, can you describe what that place feels like to those that are listening?
Oh, wow. You know, that moment, that moment of truly letting go of something that is a burden, something that is really kind of devouring your, for lack of a better phrase, your soul. You know, it's tainting you, but you don't realize how much it's tainting you because it's been a part of you for so long.
Right.
To let that go, I would say it's liberating. It's liberating to such a degree that there's a release that's hard to explain or define or put into words, where it almost feels like not an out-of-body experience necessarily, but where there's just something that is just weighted and like pressure in your chest and your body that you didn't know was there until it's gone.
Wow.
And then when it's gone, you're like, oh, what have I been missing? What have I been missing for so long?
Mm-hmm. At that moment, did you realize that your life was either about to change, or did you feel like it had to change? Because it seemed like you were focusing on, you know, maybe your work was taking too much time, and you wanted to, you know, change your life in that direction. Was that a moment where you maybe had that epiphany?
You know, yeah, I would say that subconsciously, I think I had kind of come to terms with the change. I just wasn't sure what it was and what the weight of what I was dealing with actually, you know, was, if that makes sense, how heavy and how troublesome it was. But on some level, I had kind of come to terms with it, but hadn't really embraced it on the conscious level. And that moment, that cross moment where it's like, all right, I don't want to have this kind of perverted sense of safety, which for me is controlling everything, trying to control everything to my own demise. When I made that decision to let that go, it was definitely a pivot point of where almost like a 180 with my family, with my wife, with my kids, where there was going to be a massive change, and come hell or high water, I was going to make it stick.
Now, Justin, at that point too, I remember you saying something to the effect of, you know, you didn't necessarily have something to leave there because, and this is very profound to me, because you said you already let it go. I guess I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but can you describe what that place meant to you then, or at least that moment, if you can recall?
You know, being at that place, Cruz de Fierro, it's the highest point on the pilgrimage. It's the second mountain range that you go over. And to be honest with you, I don't think either of us were really quite prepared for the weight of that place. The best way we can describe it, and it has a different feeling, but if anybody's ever been to like a concentration camp in Europe, you know, where there's been a lot of death,
right.
You can feel it when you're there. It's a very heavy, the weight of the air is very heavy and very thick, and you can feel it, you know, and in the case of a concentration camp, you feel death. The comparison I can draw to being at the base of Cruz de Fierro is the weight of a burden being lifted, or burden being left. And you see a visual representation of it because there's millions of stones and artifacts that are left. You know, tradition is that you leave something, you know, out on the base at the foot of the cross there. And going into the pilgrimage and going through the pilgrimage, you know, I wasn't searching for anything. I mean, I wasn't searching to let go of, you know, the disability that I have, the life that I have, and the challenges that I have. Whereas Patrick's, you know, he had a different take on that,
mm-hmm.
In his experience. But for me, you know, I had given up, my disease and the way that I'm going to let it impact my life way many years prior to even going on pilgrimage, and being comfortable enough in my own skin to be okay with that and to say, okay, if this is the path that I'm on, then I'm going to make the best of it and I'm going to live the best that I can. And, you know, being at the base of that cross on that day, I didn't feel the need to let anything go because I had already let it go many years prior.
Right.
But it was a beautiful moment for me to be there with my best friend and witness him go through a transformation in his life. Because I can't, you know, up until that point, and even beyond that point, I can't force him to, you know, do something different or, you know, to see life different. And he has to see it on his own. I just have to be able to love him through it and be there with him. And it was a beautiful day because we were both, taken back because we didn't quite realize what the moment of what the day was in store for us, but also to let it unfold the way that it did and Patrick realizing what he needed to do. You know, I was just very honored to be there and to be alongside of him on that day. And I can tell you that he meant it. I mean, to this day, you know, he's a completely, you know, he's not a completely different person. He's always been Patrick, but the way that he sees life and the way that he values different types of relationships, you know, especially with his wife and his kids, you know, has been realigned. So, at least in the way that we both believe, you know, our life should be aligned. And so it was really, it's been a beautiful thing to witness. And it's very humbling because, you know, I'm there at a moment when somebody's going through something so monumental in their life, you know. And he had been there with me throughout my, you know, transition and working through, you know, it was like almost the coin was flipped. You know, the tables was flipped because he had been there for me through helping me let go of a lot of things, whether he knew it or not. But then to be there to witness him go through it is, I mean, talking about awesome, you know.
Right. Describe what it felt like when you were, I guess, at the finish line, right? The end of the journey. Who is there waiting for you, and what was that moment like?
Oh gosh, that was we often describe that as bittersweet because you've gotten so used to this pilgrim's life, which really consists of where do you eat, where do you sleep, and how far are you gonna walk. I mean, it's three decisions every day. It's so simple.
Right.
And when you live like that, you know, it's not sustainable, but there's a rhythm to it and a comfort in that. But and so to let that go is hard because you're saying goodbye to a lot of people that you met along the way that who knows when you'll see them again. But at the end point, our wives are waiting for us. And so that's the sweetness. Mm-hmm. That's the, man, we haven't seen these ladies in over 5 weeks, people who have prayed for us, cheered us on, been our champions and been really the unsung heroes of this entire journey. Because without their support and love, there's no way we could have left. And to be reunited with them, oh man, it's incredible. And as you come into the square, there's all these people at the square at the base of the cathedral that we had met along the way who had finished before us that are cheering us in. And so it's just a complete onslaught of joy, humility, a little bit of sadness of letting things go, but just complete excitement at seeing our wives again, excitement about, you know, how are we going to engage in life from here on out. It's a mess of emotions, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Justin?
I mean, it's very same
yeah.
feeling. You know, the only thing I'd like to probably add, at least for me, what I was feeling was, I was almost in a little disbelief that I was there because, you know, for 35 days and beyond that, you know, we had put ourselves through the ringer of complete emotional up and down, spiritual exertion, physical exertion, emotional exertion. And, you know, we were pushed, pardon the pun, in many ways in our own personal lives. And then to be there in the square, I was like, holy crap, like we're here. Like I couldn't believe it. And it was a cementing for me of never to let my biggest dreams ever slow me down from doing something that I want to do. Because, you know, is it work? Yes. Is it going to be easy? No, not at all, not even close. Is it worth it? Absolutely. And, you know, Patrick and I have been very huge on following why we do something, not how we do something, right? It's a condition of the heart versus the mind. And we didn't know how all the details were going to work or, you know, how if we're going to make it or whatever, but we didn't really focus on that. We just focused on, okay, we're here because we believe we need to be here and just believe we need to do this. And then to be at the end and to see our wives' faces again and to be reunited with them is, I mean, you're absolutely filled with emotion. And you can't, I mean, it's hard not to be. I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was worth it, worth every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears that went into it.
When did you guys decide, though, to make it a documentary film, a book? And, you know, because this is part of, it seems like, the life change, or how this has affected your lives after. But where did the idea of, especially the documentary side of it, where did that all come from?
You know, we can't actually take credit for that. That's actually my boss, who really kind of has turned into a mentor for Justin and I. When I asked for the time off, I mean, it's 6 weeks, that, you know, in a row.
Right. That's a long time. Yeah.
So, yeah, a long time. And I asked him for the time off, and at first he was a little reticent to honor that request. who gives their employees 6 weeks off in a row? But once I told him about Justin's idea and how this whole thing had kind of come together as this journey between two friends, he got really excited, and his response to me was, I'll do everything in my power to give you the time off, as long as you guys promise me you'll do everything in your power to document it on film. And when I asked him why, his response just killed me. It totally floored me. He said, because if you don't, you're selfish and you're irresponsible. There's too much hope not to share it. And what sounds harsh really was just a remarkable amount of foresight and wisdom on his part, because we had no intention. And so it was his idea, and I let Justin know, hey, I got the time off now, but we got to figure out how to make this into a film. And that's a whole nother story. But Justin reached out to a friend of his that he'd gone to school with, and that led to the film you see today, and an actual film crew going with us. But that coming to fruition all points back to a conversation with my boss back in 2013.
Wow.
Right. And the book, we actually had no intention of making a book. So we went on the pilgrimage with an intention of making a film. So
yeah,
the conversation Patrick had with his boss, with Ed, was all prior to us leaving. So, you know, we had the crew with us film it, the whole deal. I mean, you can't film it after the fact, so we had to film it. But that was all that we were intended to do even at that point. And it wasn't until about a year later, maybe, that we were at a conference, and Donald Miller used to have this conference that he did called Storyline, and it's about using your own story, you know, to write a new one, you know, using what has happened in your life and be able to write it and recognize it, the ups and downs and the challenges, whatever. It was an awesome thing, and unfortunately he's not doing it anymore, but anyways, we were invited to keynote at that conference, and so we did, and ended up meeting like two New York Times bestselling authors. They were telling us, you guys need to write a book. We ended up meeting with a executive editor of another major publisher, and he's like, have you guys thought about writing a book? So it was like basically in the span of like 2 days, we had four or five people say, you guys should write a book, you know, and up until that point, we were like, I don't know, like, a lot of people that go on the pilgrimage write books about it. And I'm not naysaying those people because I don't want to be a naysayer because that's their prerogative, whatever. But
yep.
We just didn't feel like that was for us. And but after, you know, these people that were respected, they're like, you know, you guys, there's something different here. And then so, you know, we end up finding representation, and then we got picked up by a publisher, and man, it's crazy. So that book came out, I'll Push You, came out in June of last year, and has been doing very, very well. I mean, it's like, it's crazy to even think about it. You know, we, Patrick and I were, had never written a book before, ever. And I got to give Patrick the credit here because he's the one who spearheaded the book and did a fantastic mm-hmm. job stitching both of our voices together because it's really hard writing a book with two distinct voices. So Patrick
right.
did a beautiful job putting it together. And that was one thing that I learned about Patrick that I'd never learned until last year was how good of a writer he was. I mean, he's an amazing writer. And so you know, it's a book that we're both very proud of. And then we also wrote a children's book. Oh, actually,
mm-hmm.
let me be specific. Patrick wrote a children's book and I co-illustrated it.
Nice.
And that's coming out on April 3rd. And so it's called The Push, a story of friendship. And it's about, you know, basically our friendship that's kind of distilled down to 2 10-year-old-ish boys, and you know, and has nothing to do with the Camino. It's more about going on adventures and being, you know, together as friends and how they can push one another. And once Patrick wrote it and read it to me, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to do something with this. And so our publisher ended up picking it up. Long story there, but they ended up picking it up and believe in it, and we're excited about that coming out too. So crazy. I mean, to have 2 books and a movie and
yeah.
We speak all over the country and international, it's pretty nuts, man.
Now, if people want to know more about either where to buy the book, you know, I'm sure, you know, Amazon and those places are great, but is there a website that you'd like to refer them to and where they can find everything about you guys and what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. They just go to allpushyou.com. Everything about the film and the book are there. You can purchase the film, purchase the book through the links on that website. And as far as the kids book goes, you know, it's not out yet, but that is available for pre-order on Amazon.
Pre-order. Perfect. And I know you guys have done some work with the MDA, and there was a good interview segment, I know, on that documentary as well at the end. Are you guys still working closely with the MDA to help, you know, fundraise and get awareness out there with their help as well?
We are,
you know, we went through the film process and they were, you know, we reached out to them, about this time last year, maybe a little, you know, later, but they were, I mean, they were just amazing to be, you know, to help come alongside of us and to help us get the message out and to be able to help give back and raise money for them in the meantime, you know, as part of this was, you know, I'm talking about a win-win situation. So, you know, we'd like to do more and continue that. And we are continuing some dialogue about what that might look like in the next, you know, year or so. And we can't quite talk about it yet, but, you know, we'll have to circle back with you and when we get to that point. But, you know, it's an organization that we love. It's near and dear to my heart specifically because they were, you know, when I was first diagnosed with ALS in my early 20s, you know, that's how I was introduced to them. So they, you know, came alongside of me and gave me support where I needed it, either through, you know, occupational therapy, physical therapy, helping out with social stuff, doctors, you know, even medical equipment, things that I needed via their loan closet. I've been always been looking at ways to help kind of get back to them over the years. And I have been doing that on a smaller scale, but then, you know, I, you know, brought up the idea of doing it with Patrick, and you know, he said, yeah, if it's not something you want to do, then let's do it. So, you know, MD8 reached out to them, and they've been a really great partner. And you know, we end up meeting. They have a brand new CEO. Her name's Lynn, and she just came on board about maybe a month or two prior to our film being released. And she is an amazing lady. She's going to be doing some really amazing things with the MDA, and she has some really great ideas, and so we're kind of talking through those and seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Sounds like a lot of good things coming on the horizon. So that's fantastic. I, you know, I'm really grateful for you guys. I'm glad I personally met you. That was mind blowing for me. So I always thank you for that and your time. Thank you for your time tonight, sharing your story with all of us. Extremely inspirational. I really appreciate you both.
Oh, and you too, Jim. I mean, talking about awesome, you know, way we met. I don't know if you told how we met, but can we tell how we met?
Sure,
it's
please.
Pretty
yeah.
Awesome. So the listener, you know, who those who are listening, you know, how we met Tim. I mean, talking about this is what I love about humanity and the world and the way the world works. You know, we were in Milwaukee speaking at a conference. Pat and I were, and I think we had it was our first time to Wisconsin. So, you know, having the squeaky cheese and pretzels and beer and all that, you know, it's really good. I don't know how you're not like 800 pounds, by the way, but you know, so we're downtown Milwaukee, and I think we just put out on Facebook or whatever saying, hey, we're in Milwaukee. If anybody wants to meet up, you know, let's meet up. And, you know, Tim, you know, you're one of those people that raised your hand and said, yeah, I'll come meet some strangers. And we said, yeah, we'll meet some strangers. And, you know, you guys met at our hotel, and we met a couple other really wonderful ladies from the Milwaukee area. You know, everyone was complete strangers. That's what I love about it. Like, nobody knew anybody except Pat and I knew each other. But, you know, we all meet, you know, at the restaurant/bar and chat and had a wonderful time. It was so cool. And it's totally how the Camino is. The experiences that we had. You sit down after a long day with complete strangers and you just break bread and you talk and you just, you know, just share some time together. And then, you know, if our paths cross again. And here we are, our paths have crossed again. I mean, how cool is that? So thank you for raising your hand and saying, hey, man, I'd like to come down and meet these two yokels.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I think my perspective of it was when you guys responded, I was sitting, you know, as a positive, yeah, we'd love to meet up. And I was sitting on the couch right next to my wife, and I'm reading the messages, and it was public. You know, we were just posting back and forth on that Facebook feed, and I think I might have lifted up out of the couch in this, almost like I had this great Christmas gift. I had to tell her, hey, they said yes. She's like, what? This is awesome. I'm like, I can't believe this. I'm like, I'm gonna go have some you know, beer and cheese, and whatnot, and show them the cold Wisconsin way over there. So
it was a little chilly.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's about 18 degrees right now. Yes.
Yeah, but you know what? It was awesome, and we love what you're doing. And yeah, if anybody ever wants to reach out to us, you know, they can do that through our website and or Facebook or whatever. And yeah, we'd love to strike up conversations with others. So we appreciate the time and hanging out with us. Good question.
Absolutely. Yeah, I try. Yeah, you guys are great guests. Thanks very much. And yeah, we'll definitely circle back around with you and have you on again, I hope, in the future. So thanks again, guys.
Thanks,
Jim. Sounds good,
Jim.
Thank you so much, man. You have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
All righty. So that was, you can visit all on I'llPushYou.com. Fantastic website. I visited it several times, and follow them on Facebook. Those were our featured guests tonight, Justin Skisuk and Patrick Gray. So I've not read the book yet. I will. I'm going to get on that for sure. But I definitely encourage you to watch the documentary. It was phenomenal, phenomenal. Normally we would have a little news and notes. I think we can still squeeze that in. Why don't we give June some time to prepare herself for that? Why don't we take a quick short break, and then we'll come back and get June Kinoshita in of the FSH Society and talk a little bit of news and notes, and she's been hanging out on the line listening to the show that way. So let's take a quick break, and we come back. We'll get you those news and notes with June. You're listening to FSH Society Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Max Adler, and I played Dave Karofsky on the TV series Glee. Growing up, I saw firsthand how devastating muscular dystrophy can be. My mother and my grandmother both had it, a type called facioscapulohumeral, or FSHD. Without a cure, my family and I stood by helplessly as they were robbed of being able to do the simplest everyday tasks like chew their food, reach for a cup on a high shelf, or walk unsupported. FSHD is one of the most common muscular dystrophies. It attacks your face, your shoulders, arms, and legs. It's devastating, but it doesn't have to be this way. 500,000 people have this disease. Many doctors don't even recognize it. The FSH Society is here to help patients get the care they need. They are funding research that is leading to scientific breakthroughs, bringing us closer to treatments and to a cure every day. You can help us get there faster. Learn, act, and give at fshsociety.org.
Welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. We have June Kinoshita on hold. She's listening to the show, and we want to bring her in for a little quick news and notes like we love to do each show, and I don't want to miss that segment, even though I know we've gone a little long, but there's so much value to having Justin and Patrick on. I really kind of wanted to open up the show even longer for those two, so I hope you all don't mind. I hope you got great value out of it. But right now, let's see if we can get June Kinoshita on and see if the switchboard will accept the call here. We have a little bit of a glitch going on, but we'll talk through it because I do have at least one main thing we can talk about if the switchboard is going to give us troubles of not letting other calls on. So I apologize for that technical difficulty, June, if you're in limbo. But there's one main conference that I want to talk about. Because it appears that the technical difficulties are going to stick around. In June 9th and 10th in Las Vegas, the 2018 FSHD Connection Conference is happening. That's right, in Vegas. It's going to be at the Flamingo Hotel. I want everybody to get on board with that. Go ahead and take a look at fshsociety.org and check it out. Sign up now. I think the sign-up is open at this time. So that's like the biggest news and note I wanted to do because that's something I think we all got to try to get involved with. I'm going to plan on trying to make that event this year myself, so I'd love to meet you and come on out. So with that being said, yeah, looks like we got some technical difficulties on the switchboard, so I apologize for that, but go to fshsociety.org, visit the website, check out the news and notes going on there, and we can fill you in on all the information just through the switchboard or through the website. If you want to reach out to me in the meanwhile, fshradiohost@gmail.com is my direct email. You can go to fshsociety.org as mentioned, or on Twitter at fshsociety. You can do that as well. Special thank you to my great guests tonight. Visit I'llPushYou.com to learn more about Justin and Patrick's great journey. Buy the book and go ahead and see the film. It's awesome. Buy it on Blu-ray. It's even better that way. Their new book is coming out that you can pre-order, the children's book, April 3rd. I plan on buying it for my boys. I think they're going to love it. So thanks again, guys, for joining me this month. Stay tuned for next month's show in February, as we'll have another great guest on there as well. Take care. Good night. You've been listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.